Are you tired of trying to keep ahead in the rat race, only to have so much of your hard-earned money going to the tax collector? Equity doesn't pay the bills. Retirement savings don't pay you now, and there are only 24 hours in a day to work. The only solution is passive income that pays you 24/7 now, not 40 years from now. From vetted investment opportunities to tax-saving strategies, let John guide you through all the confusion and take control of your financial life in pursuit of financial freedom. So sit back, relax, and welcome to the Wealth and Freedom Nexus.
This show is brought to you today by Lightbulb Podcasting. Are you a busy professional that needs to get more time back in their schedule? If you are a podcaster like me, you have enough on your plate. Why not outsource your podcast production? From editing, show notes, keywords, scheduling, volume balancing and editing, and creating audiograms, podcast production is another job in and of itself. That's why I use Lightbulb Podcasting. Get phenomenal support at an affordable price while you concentrate on growing your brand. Go to www.lightbulbpodcasting.com today to schedule an introductory call. Put your content in the spotlight. Hey there, welcome back to the Wealth and Freedom Nexus podcast. As always, I'm your host, investor, educator, and realtor, John Rickard. As always, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Share this with other like-minded individuals, and be sure to follow me on Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram under WFreedomNexus. And also on LinkedIn, actually, I should mention, there's only one John Rickard in the entire world. Interesting backstory on that. So I'm not too hard to find. If you just go to LinkedIn, search John Rickard, I should be the one and only result that pops up. Now, speaking of LinkedIn, I was recently asked by a friend, hey, John, where do you find your guests for this show? And do you ever have a problem finding a guest or finding guests or topics for your show? Short answer is no. Actually, at the time of this recording that I'm going through, I have recordings banked that I've already pre-recorded. I just need to edit, publish, do some insertions and the previews like I'm doing here that I already have through the end of May 2023. And looking ahead at March through May, I have interviews scheduled that will probably take me to, I'd say, early to mid-September at this point. So if everything works out well, I'm hoping to kind of get everything pre-recorded, set for publication. Of course, this drops every Wednesday like it has from the very beginning. And hopefully for 3 months of summer, I can take some time off and get caught up on some projects around the house, spend some time with my son, go on some vacations, and just enjoy the weather. I'm getting a little sick of winter here. So anyways, with LinkedIn, like I said, there's many avenues and many paths that I find these guests, sometimes other podcasts. Many times I just get suggestions out of the blue and look into the backstory. It's like, yeah, this would be a really good topic. But LinkedIn is actually probably one of the biggest resources that I have at my disposal, not only for this podcast, but as well as with my YouTube show, hashtag screw the W2, which has really been taken off since I started that in late 2022. Now, this is actually the first time I've addressed this topic, but I hope it is the start of many discussions, and that is discussions on annuities. Now, full disclosure, I do have whole life insurance, term insurance, term insurance with return of premium rider, self-directed Roth IRAs, and a self-directed solo 401k. I do not have an annuity, but probably will get one at some point. Now, maybe just taking a step back, you might be asking, what is an annuity? Maybe you've heard about it or heard the term, but not really sure what it is. Well, my guest and I will get into a little bit more detail, but very simply, bare bones, explain it to a fifth grader, if you will. An annuity is simply a guaranteed nominal stream of income for life. Now, say annuity A, we'll just say, gives $1,000 a month, every month into your bank account until the day you die, whether that is age 65 or 122, which was the Guinness record set by Kane Tanaka of Japan as the oldest living person. So versus having a bucket of money, you know, your typical defined contribution plan, your 401k, your SEP IRA, your 403b, et cetera, where you just have this big pile and hope it lasts until you die. This can be a way to offset some risk where, you know, whether you have a long life or a short life, you know that there's one portion of your income streams that is pretty much set and guaranteed. Now, guaranteed stream of income probably sounds pretty good to you out there, but there are really, you know, full disclosure, there are two main cons of this. First, very rarely in the private sector is inflation factored into this. It is a set amount each month or every year that you get from your annuity payment. That is why I stressed nominal earlier. It's just, you know, nominal stands for in name only. It's a set amount, not taking any, you know, factors like inflation into it. Just for example, at a modest 3% inflation rate, if you start getting an annuity payment of $1,000 a month, let's say, fast forward 40 years, just at a, you know, 3% inflation rate, which is quite a bit lower than we've been seeing in the last 18 months, that will have the purchasing power of only $307. So while it's the same nominal amount, it will have less and less purchasing power as time goes on. Ironically, this is actually one of the few pros of Social Security, which I'll get into a little bit later, that Social Security is actually indexed to inflation. Now, how the benefits are indexed to inflation, we could have a very lengthy discussion of, you know, how they used to factor inflation versus how they factor it in now and how they kind of, you know, jimmy with the numbers, so to speak, to make it look more appealing. But Social Security in general is tied to inflation. And the benefits typically go up every year, where in the private sector, that is kind of very hard to find, if not impossible to find. Now, the second con for annuities, this is actually what David McKnight, who I had as a guest on this podcast back on episode 41, he calls this the Mack truck scenario. Now, let's just say you put, I don't know, $500,000 into a SPIA. Now, SPIA is an acronym which stands for Single Premium Annuity Contract. And let's just say that annuity contract will pay you $2,000 a month starting at age 65. Now, 1 month after your 65th birthday, you know, you didn't look twice before crossing the road and you got hit by a Mack truck. You, as a, if you want to look at this as an investment per se, you put in $500,000 or $500,000 and only got $2,000 back out. And unlike life insurance or retirement accounts, your heirs or your trust can't inherit those benefits. So that is, you know, a con that is associated with annuities. Now, further on that discussion, David McKnight actually goes over a number of scenarios that you can negate this risk as well through his books, Power of Zero, and I will have the links into that in the show notes here. But those are really kind of the two main cons that a lot of people address with annuities. Now, here's one final kicker here. Annuities in general are very similar and work very much the same way as pensions and what we're all familiar with here in the United States as Social Security. You may have heard from your parents or maybe your grandparents that they had or maybe still have a pension, which basically they said, you know, hey, Mr. Smith, thank you for all the, you know, 20, 30, 40 years of working at company XYZ. Because of your loyalty to the company, we are going to guarantee you X dollars a month in your retirement as long as you shall live. So again, you know, $400 a month, $1,000, $2,000, whatever the case may be, that is essentially what an annuity is. It's a stream of payments that is guaranteed or guaranteed, I'm going to put in air quotes, for as long as you shall live. Now, for the Ken Fisher followers, and I hate to say it, the Dave Ramsey cult out there that are against annuities because, well, they say annuities are bad. What more proof do you need? If you do feel that way and you have taken them at face value that, oh, well, Dave and Ken say annuities are bad, guess they're bad, and you just take that at face value, don't want to do any more research on it, just want to say that you probably won't want to take anything from Social Security, or if you're out there and you are of that belief and you are receiving Social Security benefits, you probably should just forego those right now. Again, Social Security is basically like an annuity. This is just obviously a government provided annuity versus one that you can, you know, buy on your own or in the private sector. In fact, my guest even mentions he likes my use of the word ironic in this case, when there are so many people that are against annuities just because a financial guru says they are, but yet whether they're getting it now or they're hoping to get it in 10, 15, 20 years of getting that Social Security check in the mail, well, they're basically contradicting what they say. So I've kind of rambled on here enough. We'll get into a little bit deeper dive discussion. Like I said, I hope this is the first of many discussions on annuities, just so we can present all the information, the facts, pros and cons out there, so all my listeners are educated on this, just like all the other topics I bring up. And we will get into my interview with Bruno Caron after a word from our longtime sponsors, ECI Development. Have you ever wanted to invest like the wealthy and how the 1% do, but think it's out of reach for you? Do you desire a more abundant lifestyle, but think you can't afford it? If so, check out ECI Development. With over 20 years of international real estate experience, Mike Cobb and his team can help you truly diversify your portfolio and lifestyle. How about benefiting from a generational investment that can 10x your wealth or more with a teak hardwood parcel in Panama or Nicaragua? Maybe it'll even lead to residency options in the future. Perhaps you'd be interested in a beachfront condo for under $250,000, enjoying the beautiful sunsets off the Pacific Ocean. Maybe an eco-friendly tiny home for around $100,000. ECI's team can even help you get financing for these investments. To learn more, check out the show notes or go to wealthandfreedomnexus.com/ECI. Bruno, thanks for coming on the show. Glad you could make it.
Well, thanks for having me, John. Really looking forward to the discussion.
Yeah, me as well. I know we're both in various snow-covered cold tundras of North America. So glad we could finally make this work. And hopefully by the time this airs, maybe it'll be a little bit warmer and a little bit sunnier out.
Let's hope.
Yeah, you bet. So now before we get started, maybe you can, like I alluded to in the intro, you and I connected on the wonderful world of LinkedIn. Obviously, I have a number of mutual connections. But for those that have never heard of Bruno, maybe you can give us just a brief intro on yourself.
Sure. So my name is Bruno Caron. I'm an actuary by trade, but I've been navigating between the kind of the actuarial world and the investment world. So navigating between the two, mostly as a financial analyst, and you know, both on the credit side and the sell side equity side. And through that, I've also built a passion for retirement planning and longevity risk and lifetime income.
Sounds good. And now you kind of, I don't want to say throw out a word, but maybe for some of my listeners that maybe they first heard this, what is, you know, actuary studies, I should say.
Well, an actuary is basically a specialist in probabilities and statistics, especially in the context of insurance and retirement planning.
Okay.
So, every insurance policy that is out there, the pricing is done by actuaries. The valuation is done by actuaries, and that parallel is also done with pension plan and retirement schemes.
So, okay, sounds good. So kind of high level, crunching a bunch of data. 40-year-old male, whatever, weighs 280 pounds, 6 foot, Caucasian, blah blah blah. Statistically, will live to 79.375 years or something, and therefore we need to plan around that.
that's one way to say it. There's many contexts, and there's a, you know, there's car insurance, there's home insurance, there's life insurance, there's annuities. So the common denominator there is that actuaries are usually the ones behind those calculations.
Okay, sounds good. Now we had talked a little bit off camera, and I know you kind of want to wanted to address this, and obviously it'll kind of lead into the other questions I wanted to address. But, you know, I've heard it mentioned, you know, you've mentioned it, others in the space like David McKnight, Tom Hegna also mentioned it with longevity risk. What exactly, you know, maybe is that, and why should any investor or anyone looking at insurance per se be concerned about that?
Well, longevity risk, in its simplest term, is it's the financial risk associated with living too long, basically. Okay. It's that very, very scary thought of, you know, waking up one day and just running out of funds.
Gotcha.
And, I believe this is a very, a very scary thought and a very, very important risk. As you mentioned, my friend Tom Egna describes longevity risk as a risk multiplier. And one of the reasons why longevity risk, in my opinion, is so important is that it exacerbates every other risks that are out there. So think of inflation. Well, if you're going to deal with inflation for 5 years, it's not going to be as hard as dealing with, you know, strong inflation over 40 years.
Okay.
Sequence of return risk, investment risk, credit risk, all of the risks that retirees are currently facing are basically exacerbated by longevity risk. And if you have to deal with those risks for a longer period of time, it makes it harder. So that's why longevity risk is such a crucial element of retirement planning and financial being at in that stage of your life.
Gotcha. So you basically want to guarantee, or maybe not guarantee, but be as certain as you can that your money outlives you versus you outlive your money.
Well, a guarantee is a very, very important term. And yes, I think that's part of it. And, you know, insurance annuities is part of it. Social security is part of it. And of course, your investments are a big part of it. So the whole point of the whole concept of risk pooling is extremely important, especially now that you have a baby boomer generation retiring and less are covered or can benefit from pension plans like they used to in the past. So,
yeah, I think, right, wrong, or indifferent, back in the day, you know, our parents, grandparents, you know, they had a pension, where basically you're guaranteed, and I put that in quotes because obviously some didn't happen, but guaranteed whatever, $1,000 a month until the day you die. Now it's more of a defined contribution plan, 401ks, 403bs, where, well, we guarantee we'll put in X number of dollars, but how that performs, how much returns you get, et cetera, well, that's up to you and your advisor. We're off the hook, basically.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's perfectly right.
Sounds good. Now on my show, I've had a number of guests on and numerous talking points of, you know, retirement accounts, especially self-directed and, you know, traditional or Roth accounts or, you know, similar retirement accounts, you know, throughout the world, as well as, you know, whole life insurance versus term insurance. But one segment I've never really dived into, and I don't think gets a lot of attention, are annuities. And maybe just as a high level, simple, explain it to a fifth grader, shall we say, what is probably the simplest definition of an annuity?
No, fair enough. One of the common denominators on annuities is that ability to provide an income stream.
Okay.
I'd say that would be one of the common denominators, because it is fairly complex. Annuities come in many different flavors, and you know, I don't want to make too broad statements, because sometimes things can be can get a little messy. But at the very least, annuities are insurance contracts that have that ability to provide some sort of income stream.
Okay, sounds good. And basically, it's the way I kind of look at it, and I know, you know, the Dave Ramseys, the Susie Ormans out there kind of are more like just, you know, buy term, get everything simplified, invest on your own, everything will work out. But to me, I always look at a way of my risk mitigation. Like if I'm taking all the risk, I have to make sure this money lasts the rest of my life, you know, like the risks you had mentioned before. Whereas if I can maybe outsource some of that risk, hey, Mr. Company, you have 200 years worth of all the statistical data. You have a lot smarter people than I am. You can take on this risk and know I'm going to get X number of dollars per month. Is that kind of maybe a fair assessment where, you know, I don't want to say the wealthy mindset versus the poor mindset, but more of a, you know, deferment of risk maybe to an insurance company?
Absolutely. I think you positioned it very well. And at the end of the day, I don't think it's a either or proposition. It's a, you know, a little bit of everything is always good. Diversification. We always talk about diversification in terms of asset classes, stocks, but diversification in terms of financial products and financial vehicles, I think is also applicable. So yes, I would agree with what you said.
Okay, sounds good. You know, we've kind of highlighted some of the, you know, pros of it are, you know, at a very basic level of annuities. And I think, you know, I like your definition as it's basically buying an income stream. And I'm all about multiple diverse streams of income, you know, not just in retirement, but also today. Now, with that being said, you know, another financial guru of Ken Fisher of annuities are horrible. They're demon spawn. They are the spawn of Satan, or, you know, whatever euphemism. They're just bad. And a lot of people are just, well, Ken says, you know, they're bad. What more evidence do you need? So are annuities, quote, bad, or are there some myths or misconceptions out there about them?
No, they're not bad. It's a different value proposition. Absolutely, okay. It's a different way of thinking. But they're not bad. I think it's a value proposition that is worth exploring. But it has some risk pooling elements and some guarantees that other types of investments cannot offer. Now, are those guarantees good for you personally? Maybe not. That's a question to your point that is, you know, that should be directed to your financial advisor. But in the grand scheme of things, it's at the very least, it's a value proposition that is is worth exploring. And again, not necessarily for all of your wealth or all of your assets, but at the very least, you know, consider it for part of it.
Sure. Okay. And with that, again, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole too much on this, but I know one, shall we say, con or one negative associated with annuities is a lot of advisors, or like you said, value propositions, they focus on that the fees are high. And I mean, obviously high is a little subjective, where some people might say a mutual fund maintenance fee of 1% is too high, but some pay 3%. Going to slaughter this a little bit, but I think David McKnight said, you know, fees are, how do you put this? Expense is only a concern in the absence of value, or something along those lines. Like, depending on, it might have a quote high fee, but if you're getting a high benefit from it that you perceive, well, it might be worth it. Do annuities typically have higher fees, or is it more of Company A might have higher than Company B, but not all of them are as high?
Well, you know, I think there is value in those particular fees, again, depending on your financial situation. So there's a few things there. The other thing is, you know, we haven't got variable annuities, which are one flavor of all annuities, are fairly recent. The grand scheme of things are fairly recent. And I've not necessarily gone through every single economics scenario or every economic period. There may become an economic period where that quote value is a little more better off perceived. But at the same time, you have to understand it's the whole concept of risk pooling. And is car insurance good or bad? Is it expensive or not expensive? And if you pay your car insurance premium on January 1st and come December 31st, you have not had a car accident and, you know, had no claims, was that a good deal or a bad deal? Well, if you knew you were not going to have a car accident, well, you would have gotten it in the first place.
Right, exactly.
So this is where, you know, longevity risk is a major unknown present. It could be present for many decades. And that risk pooling aspect, either it's guaranteed or non-guaranteed, because there could be some new products coming in the future to tackle that. But right now, annuities are at the forefront of that value proposition. You know, the question is, are those fees worth your while? And I would very comfortably take the position that at the very least, they're worth exploring.
Okay, makes sense. So now, and again, not to go down the rabbit hole or even the political spectrum hole here, but you know, a lot of people out there seem to have these misconceptions about annuities. Oh, you know, Ken Fisher or whoever says they're bad, or oh, they have high fees, etc. But ironically, I think many of those same people either have or hope to have benefits coming from, you know, here in the United States, Social Security. But as I understand it, at the end of the day, Social Security operates very much like an annuity because it's an income stream for the rest of your life. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right. And I love the word you used, ironic.
Yeah.
That's exactly the point, is that, you know, those that life stream, that lifetime income benefit can be purchased at a certain price. And that's something you can, you can base plan with. On top of that, Social Security is, quote, unquote, even greater value because inflation protection is embedded within Social Security, mm-hmm. which is something that is nearly impossible to find in the private market. So yes, I think your word ironic is very accurate in this particular case because there's such a tremendous value within that income stream. Mm-hmm. That income stream comes to a cost, and you know that purchase price, just like you know any other financial product or any other item for that matter, is part of the decision making process. But that this you have to take a step back and say, look, there's a cost associated with living. Uh-huh. It's that simple. If you're going to fund a retirement that will last a few months or a few years versus a few decades, uh-huh. these are completely different financial implications. And you don't know that in advance, just like you don't know on January 1st if you're going to have a car accident or not.
Right.
So it is in that mindset that having some sort of risk pooling for longevity makes a lot of sense in my mind, in my opinion. And I think it's at the very least something that should be considered.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah, and I kind of like you said with back to the ironic thing, I think it's funny that some people are like, well, I don't want an annuity. They have such, quote, high fees, but I don't think they realize it's like, well, for most people, Social Security is 12.4% of their lifetime income, essentially. It's half paid for them, half paid by the employer. And I mean, you know, who knows if that's even going to be around or in the same state by the time I retire, because yes, it's hedged for inflation per se. Ironically, the investments in Social Security don't keep up with inflation. So the catch-22 is like, well, we'll just keep shoveling more money in and kick it down the road. And politician Smith will have to worry about it in 10 or 15 years.
Well, that's a very very loaded comment. But I think at the end, I think that's one place that you and your podcast is ahead of the game. And you stress on the income stream of an investment. So it's not just about, you know, the assets that you have and, you know, the dollar amount. Is a million, is 2 million enough to retire? That's one side of the coin. Mm-hmm. There's another side of that coin, and that's income. Social yep. Security being part of that income, the income generated from your investments being another source of that income. The whole point is that the income generated from, from all sources is definitely as key as your assets when it comes mm-hmm. to retirement planning.
Makes sense. Yeah. And I, for myself too, I mean, whether I'm looking at a stock or a trust deed or a investment property, I'm, you know, appreciation is nice and capital gains are, you know, cool. I always look at it as, you know, how much income am I getting from this? And I think from a high level, whether it's a stock, a bond, a investment property or annuity, if we just look at it more focused, hey, I'm putting X number of dollars and I'm getting Y number of dollars as an income stream, maybe that makes retirement planning or maybe even life planning better for all of us at that point.
Absolutely. And I spend my time as a financial analyst and mostly analyzing insurance companies. And I analyzed them from a stock perspective, from a credit perspective. And of course, you know, depending on which hat you're wearing, you take a different position. Mm-hmm. And some things are more important than the others. So for credit analysis, the balance sheet is arguably a little more important. And for a stock, arguably the income statement is a little more important.
Right.
But at the end of the day, there's no such thing as ignoring a balance sheet or ignoring the income statement. Mm-hmm. Like that makes absolutely no sense. And I believe that's one of the re that, that's one of the very mistake that retirees are making. And they look at their account statement, they look at their account value and how much they're worth and how much they have, but how much income does that generate? That's not an easily answered question. And that's where I really admire the work that you do, because you do put, some importance to that. And I think that's really key, because when you start thinking about those, interest rates has just started to go up, but we've been in a very low interest rate environment for a long time. Dividend yields on the S&P, think about the income that with that $1 million generates. If you have some sort of balanced portfolio, or you're talking about maybe 2-3%, for a $1 million portfolio, that translates into, $30, maybe $40,000 a year. That's not a lot, which kind of implies that you're gonna, spend some of that capital, through your lifetime. How much? You don't know, because you don't know how long you're gonna live, how much you're gonna leave behind. If you're gonna die earlier, you're gonna leave maybe much more than you plan on, and vice versa. If you live longer, you may leave nothing, or you may leave a liability to your heirs. So that's where the whole lifetime income story is really key in my view. I think it's a good way to manage your income. It's a good way to manage your bequest. It's a good way to it's a good tool to plan with.
Sure. No, makes sense. So now, we kind of alluded to this a little bit, but before, annuities as they are and versus Social Security, for instance. But simple numbers, let's just say, I have an annuity that I'm just gonna round number $1,000 a month in income for the rest of my life. Now, one of the cons is a lot of times, as I understand, they aren't indexed to inflation, where $1,000 today is compared to 20 years from now, and 20 years from now it's going to have less purchasing power. Also, I'm a little bit more, susceptible to tax rate risk, especially, at the time of recording, we're at about $32 trillion in, debt here in the United States. Those two risks of inflation or tax rates, are there any, strategies that one can mitigate those risks with as far as with annuities?
Just quickly speaking, there's also what's known as a deferred income annuity, which kind of, for a certain amount, it pays you, X amount per month, but in 20 years. So if you die earlier, you get nothing. But the flip side is that if you make it there, your payout is very high. So that can compensate for that, the two issues that you mentioned. There's a way to structure it. And again, I'm not saying, this should be all of your wealth, but, small doses here and there can help you adjust and help you calibrate what's right for you. So that's one avenue. But beyond that, you can't, some of the purists will say that, you shouldn't make that comparison, but I do believe that the investment return, so the textbook IRR on your income annuity, I think you can calculate that. I think it adds value to calculate that. And my point is that if you live a longer life, that yield, that investment return is going to be higher than if you live a shorter life. And it's going to be, you're roughly going to break even with, let's say, a 20-year-old bond if you die around your life expectancy. So you have a higher yield if you live a little longer. So again, it's all about, having a basis. The other point, and I don't want to get into the math of it. I go through some of it in my book, and I think it's out there. But the other point I'd like to make is that an income stream of $1,000 for the rest of your life, to your point, in 20 years, that $1,000 could be worth, 50 cents on the dollar in real terms. Well, 50 cents on the dollar is better than 0 cents on the dollar.
That's true.
If you run out of funds completely, then you have 0 cents on the dollar. So again, it's it's not a, you know, a bulletproof, it's not a all or nothing, but it's a basis to work with. It's a base that you can work with, and that you can adjust the rest of your income. The last point I will make on that is, if you have some sort of lifetime income stream, it frees up the rest of your portfolio.
Sure.
And you don't depend on the rest of your portfolio to provide income for yourself.
Mm.
So arguably, all else being equal, the remainder of your portfolio is going to be a little higher, and
okay,
you know, can help you with that. So all good points and all good considerations. Okay. But I still do believe that lifetime income stream is key, even if it's not inflation protected.
Sure. With that being said, this just popped in my mind as you were talking, with a deferred income annuity. I'm assuming one strategy, let's say someone, you know, hey, I like the lifetime income stream. Let's have this annuity, but you know, either my health is really good or my family history, everyone's made it into their mid-80s. Let's just throw that out. Is there a way maybe you could almost, I think it's called like bond or CD laddering, of a similar thing where, okay, I start with $1,000 a month annuity. This lasts until I'm 75. If I'm still alive, then a deferred income annuity kicks in. So yes, I've been hit by inflation, but now there's a second annuity that pops on maybe for an additional $500 a month at that point. Is that a viable strategy? Absolutely. Per se?
Absolutely. And okay. To your point, everyone, you know, knows herself better than everybody else. So, you know, the whole underwriting in terms of annuities for lifetime income is still in its, you know, infancy. And, you know, pure SPIA, so single premium immediate annuities,
sure,
are still, you know, very unpopular. So this is kind of the purest form of lifetime income. The variable annuities we discussed a little earlier are more of an hybrid, where they're more kind of a mutual fund, you know, friendly comparison, arguably with higher fees, but with guarantees. So again, annuities come in many flavors, and that's something to discuss with your financial advisor. But in the grand scheme of thing, if I could leave everyone with you know, the whole point on lifetime income and how lifetime income can help navigate and tackle longevity risk and bequest risk.
Sounds good. All right. Well, as we wrap this up, Bruno, and I want to thank you again for taking time out of your schedule to educate myself on annuities, as well as my listeners. If anyone's interested in maybe, you know, finding out more, learning about you and your company, then you also mentioned about the book that you have out there. What's the best way to reach out or get a hold of those resources?
Oh, LinkedIn's always good. I'm also a co-host on a podcast myself.
Oh, okay.
That Annuity Show. It is with Paul Tyler, Ramsey Smith. We have a great deal of good guests as well. We talk, you know, obviously a little more in depth in annuities. As you, sure, mentioned, my book is on Amazon, Lifetime Income to Retire with Strength. Some of those concepts are illustrated and discussed as well. So these are all good sources to turn to.
Sounds good. All right. And again, for all those listening, driving, walking the dog, whatever you're doing, I'll have all those links in the show notes, so you don't have to hit rewind and try to hunt down a pen and paper for all those. So Bruno, again, it's been a pleasure having you on. And thanks again for educating my listeners on lifetime income streams.
Thanks to you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to share, rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. For more updates, check out www.wealthandfreedomnexus.com. Remember, nothing on this show should be considered tax, legal, investment, or professional advice. This show is produced solely for educational and informational purposes. Please consult an appropriate and licensed tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for specific advice for your situation. For distribution or publication rights or media interviews, please contact the host.